Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the Persuasion Call. My name is Kurt Mortensen. Today is September 18th, and this will be an interactive call. We'll talk about whatever you need to. I've got some things I want to talk about for the next half hour or so. And, of course, we'll take your questions as we go through this and kind of help you out the new world of persuasion, what's happening. I think the big part of persuasion, and what's different when most people teach, is really understanding the human mind, why we do what we do, why we feel the way we feel. And so understanding not only yourself but other people makes a big difference in your ability to persuade. It's not a clever phrase. It's not this other things that you do. It's really understanding human nature and helping other people persuade themselves. So let me give you a few tools today that will really help you out when you are persuading other people. It's fascinating what the new research is showing about mood, okay? Mood matters, okay? Your mood as a persuader and the mood of the person you're trying to persuade. So let's cover both of those, and we'll take any questions that you have. What we're noticing with great persuaders is that they can go from a bad mood to a good mood very fast. That's very important, because if someone beats you up or someone said something very negative and it puts you in a bad mood and you try to put on that fake smile, people can sense it. Now, they don't sense that you are in a bad mood. They just sense something's wrong, that subconscious trigger. Remember, up to 95% of persuasion involves a subconscious trigger. So let's talk about your mood. They can sense if you're covering up a bad mood. There's just something that you manifest, that you project, that they can sense. So first things, if you're in a negative or foul or bad mood, I would not attempt to persuade somebody else. You need to be able to switch that off, get into a better mood, find a way, find something that works for you to go from a negative mood to a better mood. The faster you could do that, the more successful you're going to be. Sure, somebody might hurt your feelings. Somebody might say something negative. That's just how it is. That's how some people are. Some people just say things negative just to get reaction out of you, and you have to always focus on the positive. For example, if I'm doing a seminar and there's 200 people in the room, and after it's all done, I'll talk to 40 people. They loved it. It was great. But then there's one person that might say, well, what about this? Or, well, I didn't like that part. Or they'll say something kind of negative. And, of course, it's a 40-to-1 ratio, but we always focus on the negative. So you need to switch to the positive, because you could do the greatest thing in the world, the greatest presentation. There are just some people out there, even if deep down they liked it, they will say something negative. You need to maintain that positive mood. That's number one. The second thing is you need to look at your prospect's mood. Okay, here are the studies. They've noticed with that in job interviews, when the person doing the interview is in a better mood, the person gets better evaluations. That's just how it is. One way to get people in better moods is they found by giving them a snack or the music that you play in the background. That's part of it too. Even soda. People are easier to persuade because music, as you know, if you know the law of association, that can really change people's moods. Even the sun. There was a study done at a hotel room. And if you just logged in on a cell phone, please hit *6. We're getting some background noise from you. Thank you. Here is a study at the hotel room. It's actually pretty interesting. What happened is they put someone in a hotel room where they couldn't see the weather outside. The windows were facing towards another wall. They couldn't see the weather. And so when people would deliver food service, so the food service would come up, the room service is there, and sometimes they would say, well, what's the weather like? And the first group, they would say it's sunny and warm. The second group, sunny and cold. The third group, cloudy and warm. And the third group, cloudy and cold. Only difference was the hot, cold didn't matter. But if the sun was up and they mentioned it was sunny, whether it was or not, they got better tips. So that puts people in a better mood. And even in restaurant studies, when somebody puts, so they're evaluating the food at the restaurant and someone's across the table that's very negative, puts a person in a bad mood, it affects the food evaluations. I could spout studies all day long. The reality is, okay, how could we use this? You should not attempt to persuade anybody until you can get them into a better mood. Okay? There's a variety of ways to do that. In fact, let's throw it out for the group. If someone's in a negative mood and you're trying to persuade them, what can you do to get them back into a positive mood? We don't want to take a stab at that?
Possibly humor, given the situation at hand.
Very good. Humor. Let's talk about humor. That is a good one. Now, of course, it does depend on the situation. If they're in deep anger or deep resentment, sometimes it'll backfire. But usually humor works very well, a smile, a joke. We've done a lot of study on humor, and it makes a big difference in the world of persuasion. I've done a whole section on humor to where it does increase your ability to persuade. Now, if you're going to use a joke or a story that gets people to laugh, make sure you test it ahead of time, because with humor, they're either going to laugh with you or feel sorry for you, okay? There's no in-between. So make sure it's humor that works. Make sure it's humor that's appropriate. But humor does adjust mood. That's a great one. What's another one?
One
of the things I like to do is comment on their attire. Perhaps they might be wearing something nice and comment on how nice they look. Perhaps their smile.
Okay, very good. So now we're talking the law of esteem. Anything you can do to boost their ego, to raise their esteem, it could be a sincere compliment, it could be praise. Make sure it's sincere, make sure it's specific, make sure that it's something that's believable, obviously, and that is a great way. When you can boost somebody's esteem, the doors of persuasion swing open, they start smiling, they feel better inside, and they're much easier to persuade. Because here's what's happening. When people are in a negative mood, they recall negative things, why it won't work, why this could be something they shouldn't do. But when people are in a good mood, they're looking for all the positive things, why it will work out, and why they should do business with you. That's the difference. That's how the brain works. So what's another one? I heard another suggestion. What's something else we can do to get someone in a better mood?
Talk to them like you know them.
Okay, talk to you like you know them. Good people skills, get some connection there, some rapport. That will turn them around. What's another one?
I was going to interject before, once again, with regards to when you did the explanation of humor, you also mentioned the fact of a smile. And I'm sure that a smile is one of numerous gestures that are possible. But, yes, the genuineness, the sincerity has to be there in order for it to work.
Yeah, being sincere is very important in all these techniques, finding that connection. Smile in a retail setting, like a mall-type setting, will increase sales, depending on the study, 20 to 40% just by smiling. It's contagious. It just changes people on the inside. It just tells you that you like them. And I haven't checked in a while, but how much does a smile cost? Anybody know? Yeah, exactly. It's free. It's free, and we don't smile enough. And that's one thing. Smile, esteem. Anybody else think of anything else? Get someone in a better mood?
Depending on how close you are, tickle them.
Okay, exactly. I wouldn't do that on your very first contact with somebody, but, you know, tickle them. Well, and what a tickle does a lot of times is sometimes you need a distraction. When people are angry, for example, what happens is the blood leaves the brain, goes to their muscles, and sometimes they just don't think clearly. So when someone's in a foul mood and very angry, they're not thinking straight, and so a distraction, going for a walk, change of scenery, doing something different. I was going to mediate a negotiation, and I got to the office. I was on time, but they were already there. They were upstairs, already going at it, both angry, both yelling. I'm like, oh, man, I better get up there. So I walked up there, and I figured they would stop when I got there, but they didn't. They didn't even notice I was there. They were going at it. The blood left the brain. Anger is one of those interesting emotions. We could spend all day on that one. And there was a box on top of the stairs, and what I did is I kicked it down the stairs. They both turned. They looked at me. They looked at the box. They looked at me and the box all the way down the stairs. Now, that was only 2-3 seconds, but that was enough for them to stop, get a little more blood in their brain, realize that they're both out of control. that might be something. Something different, a distraction, change of pace, change of scenery might be something that you could do.
Sure.
Sometimes finding a common enemy, if you're doing real estate and going to foreclosure, you know, getting mad at the bank with them and say, yeah, you know, they'll do that, and then kind of let them vent a little bit and change their mood up and help them get out of desperation and see inspiration. Because a lot of people in a foul mood, they're stuck in desperation. They're moving away from something that's about worry. It's about worry. It's about worry. If you can switch it up and add a little inspiration to say, okay, let's take foreclosure, for example. You know, yeah, it's tough right now. You know, the banks, you know, call them a few choice words. But you know what? 5 years from now, this is going to be a bump in the road. We're going to help restore your credit. You're going to be in another home. You'll be able to take care of your family. Let's work on a solution to do that. This has happened to millions of other people. I know the solution, how to fix it. So you're switching the desperation or worry for inspiration or vision, something they can see themselves getting away from. Anything else you can think of about getting people to change their mood?
I'm going to suggest one more thing, Kurt. This is Glenn in Cleveland.
Go ahead, Glenn.
In certain situations, depending on, you'd have to evaluate the connection you've made with the individual. But sometimes, reaching to them, you know, getting within their spatial envelope, so to speak, and, you know, getting a good, firm, comforting handshake can convey something emotionally. And if you make eye contact at the same time, they see it's, again, sincere. You know, you're making that emotional bond, and you might be able to pull them out in that way.
Yeah, you're right on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, handshake's a critical thing. I mean, we study touch, for example. Touch connects you with people. There's something magical about there. I mean, some people don't want to be touched, obviously, but a simple touch on the hand. We know that waitresses that touch get higher tips. We know that librarians that touch get better evaluations. And there's something about that. Now, that goes to a handshake. Now, here's the latest studies on handshake, that when you give a bad handshake, it takes you 3 hours to recover as far as building rapport. Does that make sense to everyone? 3 hours. Just think about it. When somebody gives you that limp fish and they're still talking to you and you're still talking, what do you keep thinking about? The limp fish,
yeah.
Right? You're stuck on that. Or even when you meet them the next time, you're still, oh, that's the limp fish person.
Yeah.
And so handshakes are critical, and it's one of those things that you really have to understand. Now, some people don't like to shake hands. If they are in the power position, for example, if you're going to meet with the president of the bank, I wouldn't put out your hand unless they do first. And someone in a power position is going to come up with their hand up on top and want to shake your hand. And, you know, check your ego in at the door. You come in underneath, not a big deal. But one thing that I would do that's not, people don't do this naturally. If you come in the handshake's just one of those, I don't know what the word is, gross, fishy, ones that kind of give you the willies. Is that a scientific term, willy? One of those handshakes that just rub you the wrong way. What I do, and it seems to work very, very well, and I've been monitoring this, if you can both tell it was just a bad handshake, say, you know what, I didn't do that very well. You take the blame. Let's do it again. Don't waste another 3 hours in getting past that. Do it again. Now women have a big complaint against men. It's pretty obvious. Guess what men complain about women, or women complain about men about handshakes?
Too hard.
So that is a big complaint. So you need to mirror their handshake. If they're not squeezing very hard, you don't squeeze very hard. Now, a lot of big complaint, too, is too many pumps. Everybody know what a pump is? You know, the person that just starts pumping up and down and won't let go. Okay, 3 to 5 pumps is about all you need and let go. Some people, they pull you in too much, so that's one. Sometimes if you come in for a handshake, it's awkward where they don't even put up their hand. You can just touch them on the shoulder. It's a very natural thing, just a quick touch on the shoulder so it doesn't come across as awkward. If it's somebody that you've met before, a double-handed handshake, it doubles the touch and works very, very well. So those are all things that make a big difference. In fact, let me open it up to the group. What are some other things that are big complaints about handshakes? We've got the limp fish. We got too hard. What else is there?
Too fast.
Okay, maybe too fast would definitely be one. And again, you're coming in, as you come in for your handshake, you're looking, you're making that eye contact. That's very important. That was mentioned earlier. What else?
I would say timing, actually. You don't want to do it too early. You want to gauge the receptivity of the prospect or the individual that you're trying to establish a connection with. But I would say timing is very crucial.
Yeah, timing's crucial. And again, it's judging if they want to shake hands or not. We've got some people out there that, you know, the way they grew up in their families, they don't touch much. There are those that were, well, I don't even know what the word, germaphobes, that are so concerned about germs, they won't do it. Was it Howie Mandel on TV that'll just do the knuckles because he doesn't want to shake hands?
Right.
You know? If that's their thing, that's their thing. Remember, you're checking your ego in at the door. That is a big complaint, too. Another one is wet, sweaty hands. Some of you can't help that. What's the solution to that if you tend to be on the wet, sweaty side?
Break out the white gloves. No.
There you go. Wear gloves. I don't know if that would work. You could wipe it off on your pants if you wanted to. Or I've never done this, but I've heard some people that will put antiperspirant on their hands. It actually works. Not the kind that smells, obviously. But if that's an issue for you, I've never tried. I've heard a couple people have done that. But usually just wiping it off or keeping it dry for most people works. But a sweaty hand would probably be just as bad as a limpy hand. What are some other things?
On that note, I would assume if you're a male, you could reach your hand in your pocket as if you were reaching for, or going for something, and then just come up empty and have your hand cleaned off.
You could do that too, or I mean, if you put your hand on your shirt, like on your hip, above your hip, you know, or like something like that would be a way, quick way to do. There's some subtle ways to do that.
Sure.
And the whole handshake, the whole history behind it's fascinating. It goes back, I believe, to Roman times. That's what you did to show the person you didn't have any weapons.
Disarmed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're disarmed, exactly. And, you know, it's history, and some cultures don't do it as much as others, but it's something to take a look at. It's your first contact. Isn't that amazing? 3 hours of recovery for a bad handshake. So that's one thing that's important to take a look at. Any other pet peeves about handshakes?
I guess you have to watch the jewelry. There's a lot of, maybe women have jewelry, or even some men have a lot of jewelry on their fingers these days. You know, just kind of,
yeah.
You know, they don't want to crush anybody's hands with their own jewelry.
Yeah, and so you want to, that's a good point. Sometimes it hurts them when they have jewelry. You just want to mirror their strength a little bit. You know, men are going to squeeze harder than women. And so it's just that first contact, that touch gets people into a better mood. And one thing, too, is if you've ever studied is the study of proxemics. Has anybody ever studied the science of space?
Spatial envelope?
Yeah, your spatial envelope. It was mentioned earlier, and it's interesting to study this space. Now, if you break that envelope with somebody, you come in too close with your handshake, or when you're talking to them, what's happening is you make them feel awkward and uneasy, and they don't know why necessarily. Now, obviously, if they're right in your face like a close talker, you know what it is. But a lot of times they feel uneasy, and sometimes it's space. Now, in the United States, usually you're going to need to at least give them 24 inches, preferably if you're just meeting them 36 inches. Now, Germany, it's different. It's much bigger than that. South America, it's much smaller than that. And if you ever see a North American talking to a South American, they're dancing all over the room because the North American keeps backing up, okay, and the South American is trying to get closer because that's what they're used to. Saudi Arabia, for example, they want to feel your breath. That's just what they do. We're just not used to that in the United States, but there's different cultures, different things that people do, and so be careful. Now, a lot of times people in a power position like a CEO, or we teach negotiations, people will break that on purpose to make you feel intimidated to get that feeling. So lawyers will do that too. It's called break the mirror. Now, when you study mirror and matching, that establishes rapport, gets people connected to you, but some people break the mirror. They want you to feel intimidated. They want you to feel awkward, especially in a legal situation. When you're on the stand, they do not want you to feel connected to them. They don't want you to feel comfortable, so they will actually break your meal. They'll do opposite gestures that you're doing, and they'll also invade your space many times. That's called break the mirror, which is completely different.
How about interrogation with good cop, bad cop?
Same type of thing. You know, they're in your, the ones in your face, the ones yelling at you profanity. It's a very, you know, you see it all the time on the police shows on TV, and it still happens quite a bit out there. And when we teach negotiation, we teach dirty deeds, which is the dark tactics of the other side that you shouldn't use but you need to know about, and that's one of them, is good cop, bad cop. And it's so obvious now, but people still are using it because it's in the negotiation book, so they still try it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about standing next to them, say, at a 45-degree angle to create a comfort zone so they feel that you're crowding them, but you're still close enough to converse properly with them?
That's a good point, especially men against men. Sometimes it's confrontational when you're just right in front of each other. Even when you sit down to a meal, usually you want a slight angle. You don't want to sit directly across from them, and that's what's in negotiations. That's important. Now, when you do that, have that angle, at least try to get your shoulders to square up a little bit when you're at that angle. It's less confrontational, and it's more relaxed, especially when you're sitting down at a table, just a slight angle. Not exactly across, not too close, especially with men. Men and women probably don't want your knees touching. You don't want to do a little footsie thing. That's not going to connect you with people. It would have the opposite effect. But it is a slight angle.
Yeah, they had John McCain on The View the other night, and they showed that specific thing where he wasn't straight ahead on him, but he turned his shoulders into the person, even though his body was still at a little bit of an angle on the couch, just to show confidence in the conversation, which is very interesting.
Confidence, and it's less intimidating probably to the interviewer. Somebody sent me a video a while back with Matt Lauer and President Bush. And, man, Lauer was so intimidating. He was almost trembling. What happened is they didn't sit down. And it's pretty obvious that Lauer doesn't like Bush. I mean, it was very obvious. So Bush, they just stood up, and he just faced them. In the Oval Office, they were face-to-face doing the interview.
Hmm.
And, you know, it doesn't matter how you feel about the president, but there's a mantle there about President of the United States and the power play there and standing up. You could tell he was a little intimidated. And, of course, I'm sure he did that on purpose, the president. To know we're going to do it this way, and they had to, and that's what he chose to do, which is very different than McCain when he chose to do the angle. I guess it depends what you want the outcome to be.
Mm-hmm.
Any other things about where are we on handshakes still, right, in proxemics? Now, another tip on proxemics and spatial relationships, this is one of the dirty deeds of negotiation, is you're going to notice when you go into a negotiation or persuasion situation that somebody's desk is really big. Have you noticed that? Or sometimes we've found when we do research that people actually will cut maybe an inch off your chair and make you sit in that chair. And you don't really notice it mentally, but subconsciously you feel a little awkward, a little intimidated. And, yes, it still happens. It's one of those weird things. And just when you're aware of it, it doesn't intimidate you. They do these strange things just to kind of mess with your mind. So the main lesson today is really understand mood. Okay? Two things here, just to recap. You need to have the ability to go from a bad mood to a good mood. So if someone said something negative, and let's throw this out, if you just had a terrible phone call or something went wrong, how can you go from a very negative mood yourself into a positive mood?
Changing your body.
Okay, in what way?
Standing straighter, putting your shoulders back, lifting your head up.
Maybe even smiling in a mirror.
Smiling.
Okay.
Yeah. Deep breath.
Going for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you just need to go for a quick walk, and then eventually, and now the first time it might take 10 minutes, and eventually it might take 30 seconds, but it could be reading a vision statement. It could looking at your goal sheet. It could be calling somebody. It could be thinking about your family and why you're working so hard. And you have to understand what works for you. Everyone's a little bit different there. Is there another
talking
comment?
Yourself. Talking what to yourself.
What was that?
Talking to yourself.
Okay, definitely. Self-talk. Realizing that they probably, you know, if there was maybe they probably weren't trying to insult you. They were just doing it. And that's why they say an old adage in sales is some will, some won't, so what, right? Who's next?
Right.
You can't persuade everyone 100% of the time. I could go to New York City and hand out $100 bills, and there are some people I could not persuade to take them. Okay? That's just how people are. They went, oh, what's the catch? Too good to be true. They're probably fake. What's going on? That, you know, so you just move on and know that it's a numbers game. And so getting yourself, coming up with a game plan to get yourself to go from a bad mood to good mood. As we study top persuaders, it can take them 10, 20 seconds, but if someone's said something negative, they switch it on, they change their mood, because even if you put that fake smile on, they can sense it.
I would
the
say
other one,
critical.
Of course. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to suggest that it's critical to develop the recognition that you're in the bad mood before, you know, because we're conditioned to do things as we have, you know, preceding this point in time in life. But it's critical to recognize that you have gotten in that bad mood, turn it around, make the conscious decision to do so, and as you practice that, it becomes, I would think, second nature. But the conscious recognition that you've entered the bad mood to begin with. I mean, you can feel the results of it, but that's different than recognizing you're there, its implications, and that it needs to change.
And that's a really good point. Most people just start yelling at people, and they don't know why. And so if you can realize that someone's offended you or you're in a low mood, you know, that's 90% of the battle. And for some of you, it could be low blood sugar. When you have low blood sugar, sometimes you just naturally, it's hard to be in a good mood sometimes with low blood sugar. You need to be aware of those things, too, of what, as far as what's going on inside. That is a big piece, definitely a big piece. Okay, any other questions?
When it comes to a handshake, is the starting position, for example, should you anticipate and have your hands at your waist level and go straight forward? Should you come in? Should you come up? Should you come down slightly, or does that make a difference?
Well, if they're, like I mentioned, if they're in the power position, I'd walk towards them, eye contact, shoulders squared up, and just kind of watch their hand, be ready to go, but I would wait for them to do it. If you guys are both same position or you're in the power position, you know, it's up to you to put out your hand and shake their hands. But I would always be ready to shake. And unless they're the power position, they don't put up their hands, I wouldn't do it. And if you do put up their hand, remember, and they don't put out their hand, just touch them on the shoulder, make it as, you know, seamless as possible, and just be ready to put your hand straight out.
One of the things I would like to comment in regards to handshake is one of the things I've learned when you shake someone's hand, you mentioned earlier the double handshake or the limp fish handshake or the handshake being too hard. What really helps too is when you're greeting someone or you're meeting someone, if you let them know, for an example, how privileged you were to meet them and at the same time squeezing their hand just slightly as you say it,
mm-hmm.
is very powerful as well.
Oh, I agree on that one, definitely. And it's interesting when we study neuroscience. Here's why this is so important, is that evidence shows that if you want someone to like you, this is what happens. As we like someone or make the person feel good about themselves, so if you can help them feel good about themselves, what happens is the dendrite connections between the neurons in the brain, you don't need to understand that, but there's something in the brain between the dendrites and the neurons that physically change. They form new neural patterns that make the person want to cooperate with us. What that saying is when they like us and feel connected to us and are put into a good mood, what happens is the brain is it makes it easier for them to cooperate for us. They're looking for reasons to cooperate with us. And so message number one today, if they're in a negative mood or if you're in a negative mood, you need to switch things up and change that before you attempt to persuade. Does that make sense to everyone?
Sure.
Yes.
Mood matters. One of those things they don't teach in school, but mood is a huge one as we study the brain. And we've learned more about the brain and why we do what we do in the last 10 years and the last 100 years combined. It's just a fascinating science. Any other questions?
One quick point. Depending upon the situation, if it's a casual environment and I'm with some friends and a friend's introduced me to someone and they put their hand to go out for the handshake, I'll give them a high five. And all of a sudden it creates this, okay. And I'll look at them and I'll nod my head like, yes. And then that puts them in a kind of an excited mood because they know in that particular situation they're being introduced to me for a reason by someone else. So there's already some sort of...
No, good call. I mean, but that's also about reading people. If you were... It depends on the situation. If you were doing a CEO that was elderly or something, or, you know, 65, not elderly, but, you know, up there, you judge
right.
it. But if it was somebody that was introduced by a friend and you could tell they kind of have an outgoing personality and that high-five kind of break the ice, definitely. That would work a lot of the times. A few instances, you wouldn't use that.
Right. But on rare occasions or once in a while, if I read them correctly and I feel like what it does is, they're expecting the handshake, but then I go for the high five, and the high five means great job already, so I'm already inferring great contact. And subconsciously, they're coming back at me like, oh, okay, great.
No, so, I like that. Yeah, I just have to read the person, make sure it's not the type of person like, what?
Right, exactly.
That would be another one where you're touching, and it just kind of breaks the ice, and, oh, this guy's cool, and you just kind of a connection, especially with a friend they're introducing you. That would go a long way. Good comment.
Ironically,
any other questions? Go ahead.
I'm sorry, this is Glenn again. Ironically, I can see using that toward the end in a successful negotiation with a pre-foreclosure prospect when it's evident that they understand the implications and the fact that their problem has been solved. You know, it really truly depends on the situation, and you have to be able to read it very well, but I can see that happening. Because once they experience that relief of the anxieties, you know, that can help to further it along a little bit. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
This is David Daytona. I was just going to say, what I do is I'm in network marketing. I don't know how it would work so well in a foreclosure or a real estate where there's, you know, great trust to be gained between the two based on the particular negotiation, but in my business in network marketing, having a business opportunity and bringing a friend of a friend in, that may work for me in my scenario a little bit better.
Yes.
And that's the importance of reading people and their emotions. If someone's in a depression from a foreclosure, there is no deception in that state, and so maybe a touch on the arm, a reassuring touch would be a great thing. If they're in anger, you probably want to hold off on the touch for a while. If you're meeting someone in network marketing, you know, that it would probably be appropriate, the touch in the different ways you would do that. So just reading human nature is a big, big part of that. But it's a powerful thing. Touch. I mentioned earlier, waitresses that touch get higher tips. And for the most part, and of course you have to be careful where you touch people. You're not going around goosing people. But and men touching women's another thing. And women touching a man really doesn't care most of the time. But then you just got to be careful where you touch people. But it is a powerful psychological connection with touch, whether it be handshake or on the shoulders or on the arm. Works very, very well.
Kurt, if I may?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Just real quick. The idea of procuring investment capital and having, say, a seminar or a, that'd be too strong a word, but a presentation for investors, if that also turns out well and you have people signing up to do so, I mean, I would think that would also be another great occasion shake hands, smile at them, and give a positive reassurance. Just another occasion to do so.
Yeah, once the deal's all sealed and you're or at least along that path and everyone's on the same page and the connection's been established.
Right.
That you know, that's a big part of it. And that's going back to human nature. When they first meet you, whatever you're doing, you have something to gain. And so a lot of times people's mindset is they're looking for a reason not to do it.
Conspicuous.
Okay, they're looking for... Now, once you've connected, maybe that sometimes you're looking for reasons to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so just, and again, that mood, that connection, that rapport, that trust is a big part. And when we teach a lot of different persuasion techniques, and that's what you do when you say, when people, and I have to sugarcoat this with people because a lot of people, it's tough for them to take, they say, well, that technique doesn't work. And I know it works. And the only time a technique won't work is if they don't like you and don't trust you. Does that make sense? Then
correct.
It backfires. Now, when they like you and trust you, techniques work very, very well. But if they don't like you, don't trust you, and looking for everything that's wrong, that's when it'll backfire on you.
I think their statements would be better qualified to say they don't believe that it works.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They don't believe that it works. They tried it, or they just tried it once. And anything you try once, including
right.
golfing, isn't always the best experience. You got to keep, you know, working on it and working through it and make it yours, adapting it to your personality.
Now, what about the situation where you're dealing with this person and they say no, they don't want to deal with you? Is it appropriate to go ahead and shake their hand at the end saying, well, you know what, it was really nice to meet you anyway, and shake their hand? So maybe if there's another opportunity down the road, a week, a month, a day later, they may have walked away feeling, well, that guy wasn't so bad.
Oh, absolutely. And when you're, were you in network marketing, is that what you said?
Yeah. David,
now, this is important. In fact, it was about 6 months ago, I was doing a lot of research on this. Is in a situation like that, you do not want to get a no. If you're sensing that it's not the right time, that you're not connecting, that something's not right, never get the no. Don't. If you know they're going to say no, don't ask them a question to get no. Because if you can say, you know what, I really appreciate your time. In my mind, this is a perfect opportunity for you. Tell you what, I want you to take this with you, look over it, and for 3 months. You mind if I call you in 3 months to see where you're at? And that way you get the yes, because if you get the no out of them right there, when you call them in 3 or 6 months, you've got the no, and they're gonna stay at no. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
If you leave the door open, if you know they're going to say no, don't get the no. Leave the door open, especially in network marketing. So many times people in 3, 6, 9, 12 months, they come back, you know, the time's right now. I did a little more research, or I did this, or I met this person that was making, you know, $20,000 a week in network marketing, and tell me more about it. But if you got the no, it's very difficult to resurrect that, you know, 3, 6, 9 months down the line when you've gotten that no. So definitely.
So the moment is when I sense they're going to say, well, I don't think it's for me, or they're going to say the quote-unquote no, that's when I throw in the tell you what right away and then give them an opportunity to leave without having to say no.
Exactly. And then leave the door open and say, you know, I really appreciate your time. I really love this business. Tell you what, I'm going to give you this information, let you think about it for a while. It's such a credible opportunity. You know, you mind if I call you in 3 months' time to see where you're at? And they'll usually say yes because, like, whew, you know, I'm getting rid of this person, but you left the door open. They weren't going to do it anyway, but you left the door open. They'll say, sure, call me in 6 months, and now you've got permission. Say, great, okay. Appreciate your time. I'll call you in 3 months.
And you get the permission. That's key.
Exactly. Get the permission. Get the commitment. Get the yes.
That's designing the questioning, which follows. I don't remember the actual subject, but one of the previous persuasion calls had covered that. You want to design your question to get the desired outcome.
Yeah, you want to get all yeses, as many yeses as possible. Because once you get that no at any phase of the persuasion process, kind of a hit, like hitting a cone. You know, there's just, it's hard to put it the wrong way. So if you can get as many S's as possible, it really helps you out.
Right.
Any other questions out there? All right. Well, good call. Did you guys learn anything?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good stuff. So main thing, mood matters. First of all, your mood, learn how to change it from bad. First, be aware. And be able to change it from negative to positive, and then be able to read them. And if they're angry or frustrated or have any one of those negative, low emotions, find out ways to, you know, switch them up. Maybe you want to come back later or do some different things or change their mood. They're much easier to persuade. So with that, everyone have a great evening, and we'll see you on the next call.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
All right, good night, everyone. You're welcome.
Bye.
All right.